at the top of the right circle. Backhand pass for Chatfield. Chatfield, little slap pass. Turn around to score. Burns! Oh, tic-tac-toe and feel the burn here in Buffalo.
Leafs trying to catch the Bruins in a change. Up ahead it goes to Marner from the goaltender. Shot, scores! What a play by Samsonov! He saw the Bruins changing. Pushed it ahead to Mitch Marner, who snaps it home to tie the game.
High slot now, McAvoy. Leaves for Zacha. Down the slot, shoots, he scores! Wow! You can see the talent there, why he was a top pick in the 2015 draft. He just ripped it onto the crossbar. 4-2 Bruins.
TSN 1200.
All right. That was 8 years ago. Took him a while to show that down. He's had a good year. He's got a new contract, Pavel Zacha. Good on him. You can see the talent there. All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. 8:18 here on a full Friday, Thursday morning. J.R. Simmer is I've called him an unhealthy scratch. Maybe he's just taking an all-star break like everybody. No, I think he's not feeling that. Well, anyway, Simmer's off today, so Michaela Schreider's been kind enough to step in again this morning. There you go. There's some highlights from the final two games before the NHL hits the pause button for the all-star break. But a big one in Toronto that saw the Bruins beat the Leafs. There you go. It was the best of times for Ilya Samsonov and the worst. That was a nice pass up to Marner and a goal, and then he got beat with a degree of regularity by the Bruins for the rest of the game. Let's welcome into the conversation Mike Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider. As always, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Mike?
Good morning. I'm wondering, what is the statute of limitations about how far back you could, like, there you can see why he was the Silver Stick MVP when he was in Pee Wee. That kind of talent. Like, I get it. Zach is having a good year. Everyone's having a good year. He is very talented. But like, I don't know if we can go back 8 years and referencing a draft spot because he hit a wrister under the bar. That seemed like a bit of a stretch. But you know what? It's all good. Boston commentators have a tendency to lay it on thick sometimes for the home team.
yes, absolutely on that. So it was an interesting game last night, Mike, as I watched the entire game. And would that be a game, and again, it's one game out of 82, and it's the last game before the All-Star break, mm-hmm. but would that be a game that Brendan Shannon, Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe would look at their team? And for me, I thought, you know, like Boston was just, they were just a little bit better than Toronto in every aspect of the game. Would they read a lot into last night's game, or is it just, as I said, one game out of 82?
Somehow they're going to do both, right? Like, I think their brain and their rational part of their thought will be, yeah, it's one game out of the 82. We don't have Austin Matthews, and, like, you're not going to beat Boston without Austin Matthews, right? Like, that's, like, in a game you will, but you would never beat them in a series without him playing. So he's such an important part of the team. If you don't have him, that's going to hurt your chances. And Samsonov has been, you know, a godsend for Toronto in net, especially at home. He wasn't great. As good as that laser wrister was, like, it was still from 40 feet, and I'd expect my goaltender to save that. Like, he was outplayed by the other goaltender, which, you know, is going to be a problem against any team, let alone one as good as Boston. So, you know, you could talk it away. Yes, it was the last game, but it was also the last game for Boston. And if you were not focused and they were a little more focused than that, that says something about the mindset of your team that you might not like. So that's the rational part. Like, it's okay. I think the Leafs are 4-2 against the Bruins the last 2 years. It's not like they've been unable to play and beat Boston in the regular season. But it was also a big game. It felt like a big game. It had the attention of the big game. Brad Marchand stirred up the media like it was a big game. And they came out and maybe didn't have their best in what is a big game. And that's the part that would be concerning. Because the Leafs, quite frankly, in their biggest games the last 5 years, and they've been in so many of them, this group largely hasn't had their best game in those biggest moments, in those game sevens, the game five deciders. Like, they've had plenty of chances to win playoff series, and they just haven't had a great game to do so. So that would be the concerning part. I mean, you could talk about Sandy, you know, third pair guys struggle a little bit. You know, I don't know, do they need to get upgraded because they lost to Boston? No, but you don't love the way that game went down if you're the Toronto Maple Leaf brain trust.
What is that last game before the All-Star break like for players, whether you're going to the All-Star game or maybe going on a bit of a vacation with the break coming up? Obviously, players are motivated for all 82 games, but is there anything maybe distracting or different about that last game before the All-Star break?
oh, you're being way too kind to players to suggest we're equally motivated for all 82 games, because we're not. The same way, if you're going on a 10-day vacation tomorrow, are you thinking about it today? Yeah, a little bit. You know, like, they know they have plans, they have flights, they have hotels and golf dates and buddies to catch up with, and it's human nature to be excited about that, be thinking about that. And in some ways, it's almost better in that last game to be on the road, because it's a little more forced hockey focus. When you're at home, like, you know, like, your bags might literally be packed. Like, some guys would be flying out at 11 p.m. last night after the game. Like, that's how quickly guys will get out of there. Some guys, fortunately enough for them, can take, like, private jets places, and they'll have their transportation waiting for them post-game to get them where they're going to. Like, that's how quickly they get out of town. So it is not distracting. It's awesome. It's a great luxury to have. But to suggest they are solely focused on the game last night, not true. Not true at all. And especially for the home team, because they can get away that much quicker. And if they're traveling with family or friends or spouses or significant others, they're also right there with them in Toronto, presumably, getting ready to go. And that's also, you know, in your ear, planning and arranging and preparing. So, yeah, not ideal. And I think you saw a lot of teams on their last game getting a little sloppy, like the Toronto, like the Ottawa-Montreal game was awesome to watch. I don't think the coaches would have loved how those teams played their last game a couple nights ago, but it was almost understandable knowing that everyone's taken off for a couple weeks afterwards.
Do you think, and be purely a guess on your part, but between now and March 3rd, that Toronto is going to make a trade of significance? Do you believe that they need to, and do you think they will? Which I guess is two separate questions.
I think yes to both. I do, yeah. I mean, I think they, like, I think their team is good enough to not make a big deal if everyone's healthy and have a coin toss series against Tampa. Yeah. But I think they need to, because they have two more years with Austin Matthews and William Nylander signed. Then who knows? Like, you don't know. This team will be entirely different. Tavares will be continuing to get older, salary cap issues, all the rest that we know. So I think, like, you have to be super aggressive, because for the Leafs, amazingly, it's not just about making the playoffs. They're going to do that. It's not even about winning a round, which seems like it should be because they can't do it. It's about winning four rounds. Like, they believe their team is good enough to win a Stanley Cup. So, like, I think you have to mortgage the future, even though you don't want to, and we know that the risks associated in trading young players or prospects or picks to get rentals or whatever it might be, guys that can help you in the playoffs, it doesn't always work. Actually, rarely works. I still think you have to. I think they would love to get another top six winger. Everyone says Timo Meier. I don't know if that guy's affordable. Maybe it's Bart. Like, I think they need one of those guys, and they probably go get a little meat on the back end, and Gavrikov and Scott Mayfield. Like, I think they're going to try to do that, and I think they should.
Now, Mike, the All-Star game can be a little bit of a divisive issue for some hockey fans, but what in your opinion is most exciting about this weekend, and why is it the Tkachuk brothers?
Yeah, right. Well, listen, I think a big part of it will be the Tkachuk brothers. The fact that they get to play together is awesome in the same team. And, you know, I played with Walt, their dad, twice. I remember Matt and Brady running around as toddlers on the ice with me. Like, I skated with Matthew when he was two in Arizona. Like, you know, when he'd come waddling out on the ice. Like, I think it's such a unique family moment. But also because they're such unique players and personalities, it'll be great. And listen, if you're a diehard, tried-and-true hockey fan, the All-Star game might not be for you, right? Like, it's not real. It's not serious. It's not like hockey. And that's okay. It's not really for you. It's for growing the game. It's for the business partners of the game. It's for the young fans who want to see tricky shootout moves and skill competitions and highlight reels and no defense. And that's what they want. And that's what they get. And that's why it's good for those people. But I think it will be fun to, I imagine the entire Tkachuk family will be down there. So to be able to catch up with all of them. And to just to think about, like, how different the path is for Matthew and Brady, and how they've gotten to this All-Star game with Matthew switching teams and picking his spots, and Brady kind of committing as a young captain to one spot. It's just, they're both very different, but both exceptional. And I imagine they'll stir something up. I mean, come on. They're the Tkachuks. Like, they're probably going to hit somebody in the first game of the 3-on-3 if they can, which will be fun to watch.
Buffalo's Tage Thompson, who was scheduled to be the Sabres representative at the All-Star game, was injured last night in the second period. There was no update after. Confirm or deny, all the other Sabre players, when they saw him injured, put their phones on mute and were incommunicado regarding any call from the NHL going to the All-Star game because they all wanted to take flights to warm places.
Yeah, you know what? So I would say no. I mean, that's very true. Like, why is nobody from Seattle going? Because everyone in Seattle's gone somewhere, and they don't want to interrupt whatever they're doing to go play in an All-Star game. But I think, given the fact that Buffalo is still playing, like, they haven't left yet, for Alex Tuch to go down there, like, you know, it would be 2 days. Then your vacation could start Sunday instead of starting, what did they say, Thursday. True. You know, it's going to cost you 3 days. I would tell them, go. Like, you never know if you're – well, Rasmus Dahlin should go, really, given what he's done statistically. He probably deserves to be there anyways. Go, because you never know if you're going to get that opportunity again, and you'll have still a week off afterwards. But it's true. It's very true. I remember, was it Brian Elliott, when he was the goalie for St. Louis, he was actually already down in wherever, Turks and Caicos, and he got a call, can you come back? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. You know, home, it was his home team to play in the All-Star game in St. Louis. But, you know, a lot of guys would say, no, I'm good. I don't need that. I'd rather have the rest and the relaxation than the whatever the honor is of playing in it or participating in an All-Star game.
And Mike, the Sens are on a bit of a heater here, a 4-game win streak. They're at this point in the season, 24-23-3, not exactly the record we thought they would have at this point heading into this season. How much should we make of this kind of recent hot streak? And, you know, how do you explain why the Sens are where they are at this point in the season?
Well, I mean, I explained the recent hot streak because, like, the Sens are pretty good. Like, you know, like, they're a team that's good enough to run off 4 or 5 in a row. The goaltending has been sharp enough. The power play has been very good, as it has been all year long. And so they've won some games, which is awesome. Why their record is the way it is? It's because they're not that good, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not an elite-level team. They're a team that's probably going to be a few games over 500. If you would have said they finished 86 points this year, I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. They won't make the playoffs. They'll probably be 6-8 points shy of that. And that's probably what they're going to be when it's all said and done. I know it's exciting to think of them as 6 points out. That's not very far, and it's not. But when there's 5 teams between you and or however many teams there are in a playoff spot, it's a lot. Games in hand come into play. There's a lot of different things that have to go into it to get to the playoffs. But, you know, I just think they are kind of what we thought they might be or what I thought they might be, a really good offensive team, could score goals, mediocre goaltending, that has some really good hot moments and some other moments where they're kind of average, and then probably slightly less than average defensively, with some of the reads in their own end. And that's kind of what they are. And when you are a team like that, you are a 500-ish team, and they are a 500-ish team. But they, given how they're playing, they're probably a team that did not want to go on All-Star break. Like, you're rolling like this, you finally got it going, you got a little chemistry, Greg's playing with Giroux, and Giroux's 20 again, having fun with his new buddy. Like, they probably want to keep going until it ends and then go on their break, because they don't want to have to try to restart the momentum 10 days from now when they get back to it.
So they made a really interesting decision. A lot of teams, especially with young players that are bouncing between their minor league team and the big league team, will send them back down during the NHL All-Star break. And the Sens did that with Ridly Gregg and a couple other players. With Gregg, though, Mike, they sent him down to Belleville, but he's only going to practice. He's not going to play in any of the games. And, you know, what do you, you know, I'm kind of the opinion of you can't bubble wrap players. I understand it, but I don't to a certain extent. What do you think about that decision? How does that speak to, after 4 games, the importance the organization has on Ridly Gregg being available to play in NHL games?
Yeah, I guess that's my first instinct. If you're Ridly Gregg, you feel pretty good about that. I mean, you're not happy you're going to Belleville. You'd rather get your NHL salary by lying on a beach. But I think the idea that they're treating you as such a pivotal piece going forward, that we want you to go to the minors because that's the appropriate thing to do because you can. You stay in game shape because you'll be able to practice. But we're not going to risk it because you're so important to us that we're not even going to risk you playing in a game. Like, I guess that does speak volumes about what they need out of him and how pivotal he's been to this recent run. And the idea that, for all the talk about development and young kids and everything else, like, the organization, Pierre Dorion, cannot deny that they have an eye on trying to make the playoffs still, right? Like, they have not turned the page at all on trying to make the playoffs because they're not going to let a guy go play in the minors. And I wonder then if he just gets, like, I don't know where Belleville's schedule is the next 10 days. He probably won't have to travel the games then, right? Like, he won't be on the bus going places. Like, I guess if they're going to go play 3-3, he's probably, I don't know, would he get just to stay in Belleville and skate there with somebody, whoever's around, to make his life that much easier? So it's interesting. It's unusual. I suppose I kind of get it. If I'm the player, I'm probably not even bothered by, I mean, I'm not bothered by not playing games. I'm not desperate to get into another American Hockey League game. But I think it more speaks to where the mindset of the organization is about their chances this year. And they are clinging to them as though they are still realistic to make the playoffs.
You mentioned the Sens are clinging to those chances of making the playoffs, and obviously it's just four games, but let's say they string together a couple more wins post All-Star break. Do you think that that impacts and in any way what their plans were at the trade deadline? Or do you think that they had this vision of like, well, this is where we were going to be anyway, that, you know, this streak is more indicative of who we are. Do you think it can impact at all what their original plans were for the trade deadline?
Oh, for sure. For sure. If they're 10 out, then Pierre Dorion wants to go. Like, he wants to trade something for this year. I don't know if he should. I think he probably shouldn't. But I think he wants to. Like, I think he wants to, for his group, offer some support to give a chance. And if they're 10 out, you can't, in good conscience, trade any sort of anything for a player for this year. But if you're 4 points out, well, then you can. You can sell it to ownership. You can sell it to the players, to the media. Like, this is not an unreasonable thing to do. So I do think, and Pierre Dorion has basically said, how they do in the next few weeks will determine what he does. I still think he should be shopping for, maybe it helps him this year, but that elusive right shot defenseman, they've been chasing for a year and a half. It's a time of year where players are getting traded and contracts are getting moved. So if you can go get that guy, not just for this year, but for next and beyond, then yeah, like, you are actively searching that. But you're not, like, to go get a straight rental, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. But he might do it if they continue to play well and win games post-break and get within 4 points of a playoff spot by the deadline.
Yeah, but I saw you and Darren did the desk for the Sens game against Montreal, and you're kind of talking about that and debating it. And I guess, you know, and Darren made the point of, but you don't want to give up Ridley Gregg and Shane Pinto and or your unprotected first round pick. And I'm like, well, if you're not giving up that, you're not getting anybody who's any good. It's like,
you see me jumping out of my chair. Like, well, at some point, if that's the cost, you got to make a decision. Like, nobody wants to give up a good player. No one wants to give up a good pick. But if you can't, if you need that other player, and they do, they absolutely do need another top four right shot defenseman, like, it's going to cost you because other teams want it too. So either prepare to deal without it or prepare to pay the price to get it. But there's kind of like flirting with the idea, we need it, but we can't pay that much for it. Well, then you don't really need it.
No.
Because that's what it's going to cost you. So you got to make a call. And like, I'm not saying I want to give up Pinto. But what the one interesting part about this, and I'm thinking about this out loud as we talk. Okay, so next year, let's just presume Josh Norris gets healthy. We cross our fingers that's the case. Stützle, Norris, Gregg, Pinto. Like, that's too many full centermen. It's a good problem to have. That's too many centermen to have one of those guys play on the fourth line. So maybe Munn moves to the wing, or maybe the emergence of Gregg, and if you trust what you see is real, like, maybe Pinto, I'm not saying he's expendable, but, like,
right,
you know, like, you don't need four top flight centermen. Like, you know what it is? You can't afford in today's age to have four top flight centermen because you need to use those assets to strengthen your team elsewhere.
So maybe
that's what's becoming apparent. Like, they have their three in Stützle, North, and whoever, Gregg or Pinto, and the other guy can maybe be used as a trade ship.
And maybe this, what we're seeing with Ridley Gregg, not that he's not needed because, you know, he's shown that he's needed and can fill, but it's a real good test drive to see what they've got through the rest of the NHL season. I'll just make one more point, and you can give me your thoughts, and we'll let you go, on the potential of trading for a defenseman. I'm totally against the idea of even trading for somebody who's got term, Mike, right now, because in June and July at the draft and in the summer, you're going to have 31 other teams, and 30 of them are going to want to, in some cases, to a large extent or to a smaller extent, remake their team. They didn't win the Stanley Cup. And you're going to have a lot more options to me in the summer than you've got right now, which is why I would be very much against any sort of deal right now, even if it's for a player who's got some term. But that's my thought. You?
Yeah. The theory behind what you're saying makes sense. I guess I just wonder, will there be more options? And I don't know. I don't know, because I just, you know, if there's 20 teams that are trying to make the playoffs now, like maybe teams might be also very aggressive to try to help their cause right now, right? Like, so maybe a team's willing to trade a defenseman before the deadline so they can try to change their team around to take a run this year as opposed to in the summer. But yeah, like you have to make sure you understand the leverage, the availability, the, you know, the supply and demand chain. But I am all for making a trade for a guy with term now or in the summer, but they better get a guy before the start of next year, or I'm not having this conversation anymore.
Okay. All right. That's a deal. We got it. We will make that commitment to you. Okay. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Mike. Enjoy the All-Star break and the All-Star weekend, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Have a great weekend.
TSN's Mike Johnson on TSN 1200. TSN 1200 presents Bet and Breakfast, powered by FanDuel. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook.
All right. Well, yesterday I was waffling between Marner and Tavares to score a goal in the game. I did predict
them. You didn't say that on the air, did you?
No.
You just went Johnny T, so are you making this up?
No. I had to pick one or the other. I did predict the Leafs would win the game last night. Wrong. And I predicted Tavares would score. Wrong. I was between the... Anyway.
Got a bad case of the simmers.
No games in the NHL tonight, but 7 in the NBA to bet on at FanDuel. Lakers visit the Pacers. That's the first game of the night. Of course, Pacers have a huge Canadian contingent. 3 Canadians on that team. And the Lakers with LeBron closing in on the all-time career points record. He's probably about 3 games away or thereabouts, 89 points short of Kareem's record. All right. Lakers are currently a 2-point favorite. The total is 240 on that one. You can also catch the Cavs and the Grizzlies on TSN 4 tonight. Cleveland is a 6-point favorite in that one. Later tonight, it's the Clippers and the Bucks. That's the best game of the night tonight. Milwaukee is a 4.5-point favorite. You can bet on Giannis to score 35-plus points at plus money. Total for that game is at 231.5. Bucks have won 4 games in a row. There you go. Make every moment more on FanDuel, North America's number one sportsbook. All right, coming up next hour, Brad Berry, the head coach of North Dakota, is going to join us. We, the last couple of years, as North Dakota was the unofficial farm team of the Ottawa Senators, when at one point they had 4 prospects and then had 3 prospects. And this year it's down to 1. So we haven't talked to Brad. Well, we haven't talked to Brad at all this year. But Tyler Cleven, of course, is the Sens defensive prospect who's in his junior season at North Dakota. It'll be good to get caught up with Brad, find out how Tyler's season has been going. I know he scored some goals. I know he's had some suspensions. But I will talk to his head coach to see how his season has developed and what the plans are once they get through the NCAA regular season and then the playoffs. Right now, North Dakota, I think it's fair to say, is a middling team. I don't know anything can change that they're going to go on a run to the Frozen Four or anything like that. So pretty decent chance Tyler Cleven, should he so choose, and the Sens could turn him pro before the end of the Sens season. I think there's a pretty good chance of that, and therefore could we see him play maybe even some NHL games, certainly some games from Belleville this year. So we'll get caught up with Brad Berry next hour here on TSN 1200. Michaela Schreider is here until 9 o'clock. I did want to bend your ear a little bit about a couple of things, which I'm sure you guys will expand more upon on She's Got Game this weekend here on TSN 1200. So WNBA free agency yesterday, which to your chagrin was somewhat overshadowed by Tom Brady deciding to announce his retirement. And as a communications expert, I'm sure you're like, come on, Tom, of all the days.
I'm busy, man.
Yeah, exactly. But Breanna Stewart, who is a 2-time WNBA Finals MVP, has decided that she's changing teams. She's going to New York. And that is, you know, from what, I mean, you can give me your insight on this. You know, people are saying this is arguably the biggest move in WNBA history her moving and changing teams and going to arguably the biggest market. So what do you think? Good move for her. And is it a good move for the league having her joining forces and having such a high profile team in New York City?
I'm going to remove my Seattle Storm fan hat for a minute because it's very sad. But yeah, this is a huge move for the WNBA. You've got one of the best players, one of the biggest names in the league, changing teams in free agency, going to the biggest market, but going to a team that, while they're certainly on the rise, has not been one of the best teams in recent years, right? But they brought in, just before they signed Breonna Stewart, they brought in Jonquel Jones, was league MVP a couple of years ago, one of the best players in the league. They already have Sabrina Ionescu. They've already got a number of great young players who are just kind of starting to hit their stride, and Michaela Onyenwere and Dee Dee Richards. They still have Maureen Johannes and Stephanie Dolson. With the addition of Breonna Stewart and Jonquel Jones, they became a super team, like without a doubt. Right there, the three top players, those are three of the best players in the league in Jonquel Jones, Breonna Stewart, and Sabrina Ionescu. So I think this was a huge move just from a newsworthiness standpoint. Obviously, it's shifted the, shifted the league in terms of who the top team is. And just less than a week ago, we found out that Candace Parker is going to the already stacked Las Vegas Aces coming off their championship. Candace Parker going there created a super team there. So now you've got Las Vegas and New York, who are these two powerhouses and juggernauts in the league. And I think, like, almost in a matter of days, you saw the league shift a bit. And now we've got these two super teams, which I think is just great for the league.
I always think that dynasties and or super teams, whatever, in any sport, any team sport, I actually think are good for the sport because they do get people talk, just in terms of eyeballs and ears and everything else, and just the talk factor. I think that is big. Do you think that the league, and this will never be public, but do you think that the league would have nudged her to go to New York?
Well, we kind of saw it coming because she met with New York last offseason. She was a free agent. She met with New York, and then Sue Bird announced that she was coming back. And so Breonna Stewart stayed in Seattle. And my prediction at the time was that she was going to try and make a run with Seattle in Sue's last year. Obviously, they did that. Didn't work out, but they tried. And then she would go to New York next year. And as I hate that I was right, but I was right. And that's exactly what happened. So I think a lot of people saw it coming. The New York Liberty, the Tsai family is who owns it. They're one of the ownership groups that actually invest in their team in the WNBA.
Right.
There's a bit of an unfortunate trend of a number of owners kind of using their WNBA teams as write-offs, but the Tsai actually care and they invest. They got fined last year for flying their players private across the country. Flying commercial is a huge issue in the WNBA right now, but they actually want to give their players proper resources and invest in them. And I think that they had a huge hand in getting Breonna Stewart there. Obviously, they were in Turkey, where she's currently playing, to try and convince her to come to New York. And, you know, I think if the league is smart, then they're working with their bigger ownership groups who want to invest in their teams, because that's what's ultimately going to grow the sport. So I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but I know that the Tsai family was very, very focused on getting Breonna Stewart there.
Okay, you guys will have much more on that this weekend on She's Got Game, I'm sure. And you and I were talking, texting last night about the She Believes Cup. Canada's national women's soccer team will be a part of this. So this is, it's a four-team tournament. Here it's happening in the U.S., this year, Brazil and Japan are the other two teams involved in the tournament. A couple of Ottawa women are on the team. Vanessa Gilles, who, of course, was part of the gold medal winning team at the Summer Olympics a couple of years ago. She's there, as is Clarissa Larrissey, who she's part of the national team for a friendly late last year, I think, for the first time. She's going to be on the team as well, which is awesome that we have a couple of Ottawa women as part of the national team and going forward as we head toward the Women's World Cup later on in 2023.
Absolutely. You know, as we look at the Canadian professional Canadian Women's Soccer League that's going to be started in 2025, I am very adamant that Ottawa should have a team. And I think the more Ottawa representation we have on the national team is only good for that. The roster that was announced, it's a lot of people were kind of questioning some of the players that were left off. It's important to note it's a pre-camp roster. So there are probably some players who will be added later on. A number of big name players, including Jesse Fleming and Kadisha Buchanan and Adriana Leon, for example, are playing overseas with their WSL teams right now, and they're in season. So they didn't name them to this roster, but I suspect that some of them will come in for the tournament. But of course, you know, the rest of the roster, you've got some of the usual suspects. You've got Quinn, you've got Sophie Schmidt, Christine Sinclair, Janine Becky, Jordan Heidema. And this is, you know, we saw it in the CONCACAF tournament last year, but what I'm most looking forward to is what Kaylin Sheridan, the goalkeeper, can do. Everyone remembers Stephanie Labbe, Minister of Defense. You know, her being on the team during the Olympic run was amazing. But Kaylin Sheridan is arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the world right now. She won the Golden Boot at the CONCACAF tournament. She won NWSL Goalkeeper of the Year. And I feel like we don't talk enough about how great she is and how great it is that she's Canadian and on the Canadian women's national team. And, you know, this is a great tournament, despite you and I were talking about the fact that it needs a new name.
yeah. Can you explain the origin of She Believes Cup?
I wish I could. I don't know. Right. I wish they'd change it. It makes it sound like such a cliche. It makes it sound like women's sports is a charity. And I call it what it is. It's a pre-World Cup tournament. Right. This is where we start to get a look at what some of the top teams are going to look like. And this is where Canada can measure itself against those top teams, kicking things off right away with the number one ranked team, the U.S. women's national team. And I am of the mindset, and if it doesn't work out, I know I'm going to be clipped, but I think that this, if there was ever a year to dethrone the U.S. in the World Cup, this is it. They struggled to end 2022. There've been a lot of weird roster moves. A lot of people think that Vladko Andonovski is trying to destroy this team from within. And I feel like if they were ever vulnerable, it's now. And I'd love to see what Canada can do against them. I'm going to be in Orlando for that game, so I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But I think there's a huge opportunity right now for Canada to make some headway in the World Cup, where despite being, you know, one of the, you know, they're sixth ranked in the world, they're the defending gold medal champions. They struggle in the World Cup. They don't have a ton of luck in the World Cup. So I'd like to see them use this opportunity to make some headway in the World Cup this year.
Okay, like, you know, told me that. Boots on the ground for the game. So is it, hey, Florida, February, Canadian, makes sense. Oh, there's this, you know, this great game going on, or great game going on. Oh, it's Florida. Like, what chicken or egg? What was the first thing on why? Be honest now. What was the impetus to going down there?
The game, for sure.
Okay.
Listen, I've been to, no offense to Florida, although it is Florida. I've been to Orlando. Even amongst the places to go in Florida, I don't think it's the number one destination. I don't care.
Minus 40, Michaela.
It's true. You know what? At the end of the day, I got a hotel with a pool, and I was like, if the worst case scenario is I spend a couple days by the pool and go watch some Canadian soccer, I think I'm doing okay. Plus, like, you know, and I'm going to be on the media side of things, but to be a Canadian at a Canada-USA game is a little nerve-wracking, but it's Florida in the winter, which means 50% of the population is Canadian.
Exactly.
So I feel like they'll be well represented there.
You're good to go. Okay, that game is a couple of weeks, right?
Canada, February 16th. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that'd be 2 weeks today.
2 weeks today.
Okay. You'll be poolside and then you'll be pitchside for the Canada-U.S. game at the She Believes Cup. All right. A couple of things before we let you go. By the way, I just saw a review. Earlier this morning, we were talking about Tom Brady and then the new movie that's out, 80 for Brady. I just saw a review, read a quick review in the Globe and Mail. I know this will be a big shocker, but the headline reads, the movie is an embarrassing fumble.
What?
Yes, I know it's a shocker. The story is cliched. The ending, there is no rhythm to the movie. So,
I would have went with this movie is deflating.
So the good.
All right.
The reviewer wrote, "It might be good enough only for the older lady demo." That's what the female reviewer wrote about 80 for Brady. The
yikes.
Yeah, exactly. So save your shekels. Wait till it comes out. It might be one of those.
It won't last take
for
long.
Last for a week. Then it'll be on Netflix or whatever, if you feel the need to go and watch that. So there you go. What did you make? Before I let you, I wanted to ask you, speaking of soccer, should get back to this whole John Herdman thing yesterday. Was very interesting, where yesterday morning it looked like John Herdman could be leaving the coaching job with Canada's men's national team and going at best a parallel move at maybe more so a move in the opposite direction to go coach the New Zealand men's national team. And then by the afternoon, all of a sudden, there was a statement from Canada Soccer saying that that John Herdman was have his contract through the 2026 Men's World Cup, which will be played in North America, including in Canada. The statement said from John Herdman in part, quote, "I'm not going anywhere." It almost felt like in reading the statement that they were protesting too much about talking about what had kind of leaked out in the morning. I don't know how much you had time to read with everything else going on yesterday, but what was your kind of takeaway on either that or on this news about John Herdman?
Yeah, it was a weird situation for sure. And to be honest, by the time I had caught up on it, we already knew that he was staying. So there wasn't like this period of time where I thought he was leaving and then it was debunked. But I think a lot of people were talking about what a weird scenario it was and like who fumbled this. Was it Canada Soccer or, you know, did someone leak something? So I don't really know what to make of the way things played out. I mean, as a Canadian soccer fan, I'm happy that he's staying. I know you could say a lot of things about John Herdman, and I know a lot of people were not overly happy with Canada's performance in the World Cup, but, you know, he got them there. He got them there for the first time in 36 years. Christine St. Clair's called him the best coach she ever played for, and I think that means a lot coming from the GOAT. So I think it's great that he's staying. I think he's great for Canada soccer, and I think he's great for the men's side and the game in general. So I'm happy he's staying, but yeah, it was definitely an odd scenario.
The News Hub, which is a New Zealand news service, said yesterday morning that Herdman was, quote, the preferred candidate to take over the role and that he had agreed to terms, but a contract had not been signed. Herdman himself, in the statement yesterday afternoon, did also say that he had several offers, including the one from New Zealand. So this is where there's a bit of a disconnect for him. He had an existing one and still has a contract to coach the Canadian men's national team through 2026, and yet you're still talking contracts with, self-admittedly, other teams and countries, either club teams and or country. That whole part. Anyway, he wrote, quote, "To our Canadian players and our fans, I want to reiterate my commitment to Canada soccer and the growing of the program. At the World Cup in Qatar, our men showed the world that they belong at that level. I'm not going anywhere. We still have a job to do, and the objective is to take this team to the next level in 2026, end quote. Michaela Schreider, will John Herdman be the coach of Canada's men's national team at the 2026 World Cup? Yay or nay? Oof.
It's funny that he says I'm committed, but, you know, obviously was listening to offers from other people. It would be weird if after all of this, they let him go at some point. But I mean, it's hard to say yay or nay, because, again, I have a hard time letting go of a coach that got you as far as the men's team went, you know, further than they've been in 36 years, and arguably further than they've ever been, because they actually scored a goal in this tournament.
The counter to that, though, would be that maybe this is as far as John Herdman can take this group, which has been, hey, listen, you're right. He's taken them to a place they've never been before, but sometimes it takes another coach to take you to that next level, even if it's just a different voice. That would be a counter argument to what you're presenting right there.
I think that's fair. I think that's kind of what you saw play out with the women's team, right? You know, bronze medal after bronze medal in the Olympics. There clearly was a bit of, there was some stagnation there. And as much as he was well-loved by the players, it was clearly time for a bit of change of voice. And look what happened. Bev Priestman comes in,
right,
and they win a gold medal. So sometimes, as great as a coach is, yeah, you're right, they can only take you so far. And if you've hit that ceiling, then it might be time to change. I think you'll see, much like we did with Bev Priestman, you might see that change happen like months before the tournament,
yeah,
because they may realize, you know, right before, that this just isn't it. This isn't going to get us where we need to be. So if there is a change, I feel like it would come kind of at the last minute.
And it would not be unprecedented. I mean, we need to look no further than the Canadian women's national, the hockey team, right, in 2014. Where they fired the coach, what was it, a month or two before the Olympics, and Kevin Dedeen came in, and
yeah,
they ended up winning that was the incredible gold medal game, and the big, the puck hitting the post with the open net, but, all right, they changed coaches. That was less than 2 months before the tournament, right?
Yeah, and a longtime coach too. Like Melanie Davidson had been with that program for, and she's, I believe she's still with the program, but she's not coach. Well, obviously wasn't the coach anymore. But that was a big, big change. And yeah, like again, we see the spark that teams get post coaching change, right? And and sometimes it's short lived, and sometimes there's nothing to it. But oftentimes it's the last thing that you need to get over that hurdle. And I do think that it can be a bit of a strategy to, you've got the talent, you've got the players. Now you just need the right person to motivate them. And sometimes a last minute change, it can work out. We've seen it happen.
All right. Good stuff. You and Vanessa will host She's Got Game this weekend. What are the topics?
Mostly just WNBA free agency and trying to catch up for the from the last couple of days. Tons of stuff in the soccer news as well. We talked about the Canada roster. We also know the U.S. Roster for the pre-camp for the She Believes Cup. So we'll talk about that. Also, some interesting stats out of the Australian Open viewership. So we'll break it all down.
All right. Good stuff. Appreciate you jumping on today, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right. There's Michaela Schreider, co-host of She's Got Game, heard every Friday and weekend here on TSN 1200. We will take a break. Top of the hour update is on the way. Brad Berry, head coach at North Dakota, will join us in the next hour. We'll also have a chance for you to win Sens Wings tickets for a game coming up in the latter part of February. Skill testing question on the way. Family four-pack of tickets is the prize. We'll have that for you coming up later on, right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200.